On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with Kevin Williams, creator of the NearDeath.com website.
I think it's a real mistake to underestimate the appeal of the materialist, reductionist philosophy. So just because a few people have written best-selling books and made it onto the Oprah circuit, if you will, that doesn't mean that there's going to be an end to the war machine or the depleted uranium that we're going to shoot over in Syria. Or the only thing I can conclude is that it's about personal transformation, and it's about embracing that. And in the process of embracing that, then I think trying to come in contact with other people and create that community.
Well, right now we see both sides, religions and the hardcore scientists, materialists, are kicking and screaming. But this point of merger is happening right now, especially in, I think, in quantum physics, when, you know, there's a mystical aspect to it that can't really be denied. But the materialists and religionists are kicking and screaming. But I see a day where there'll be no more faith involved, because the new knowledge will come in that is inescapable. I mean, it'll be the religious person will have to abandon whatever erroneous faith they have or dogma, and the same with the scientists.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, I have an interview with Kevin Williams from NearDeath.com. Kevin does an absolutely great job on the NearDeath website. It's a valuable resource with a lot of good information. I always seem to run across it when I'm looking for information on a near-death experience researcher or a particular topic. It always seems to pop up at just the right time. So I was interested in finding out more about the guy behind the website, and I managed to get Kevin to agree to sit down and talk to me for a little while. Here's my interview with Kevin Williams. Today we welcome Kevin Williams to Skeptico. Kevin is the creator of NearDeath.com, probably almost definitely the number one website on near-death experiences, both in terms of visitor traffic and in terms of the comprehensive amount of information about near-death experiences, near-death research, and all topics related to this amazing phenomena. Kevin is also the author of Nothing Better Than Death, Insights from 62 Near-Death Experiences. Kevin, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Alex. It's my pleasure.
So as I just mentioned, the Near Death, and that's near-death.com, is amazingly comprehensive. It pops up virtually hundreds, if not thousands, of different search terms. So people, even if they're not familiar with the website, have probably encountered it. Start us off from the beginning. Tell us how you started it, why you started it, and the driving force behind it.
First of all, I'm a big believer in synchronicity. And it seems like most of my life I've had that. When I was a kid, my dad had a small CRT screen. And for some reason, I knew that I could build it so that people could put and ask questions to it and get answers back. And I just had that in my mind for a long time. I don't know why. But then when I went to college, I took computer science, and I graduated just about the time when the internet was taking off. And before that time, I read Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life. And I read that in the late 70s. And since then, I couldn't get enough books to read on the subject. And so it was kind of a synchronistic time that I just happened to learn how to build websites at a time when I was fully knowledgeable about near-death experiences and a time when I was able to do it, to build a website. So I started really early And part of the reason why I get a lot of hits on different keywords is because I designed my website as a portal, which means that there's usually only two or three levels deep in my website. And I built it that way specifically so that it would do that. It would have the ability to access a lot of information right up front. And also, it would be a lot easier to navigate.
Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, you did not have a near-death experience prior to starting this. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. I've never had a near-death experience. But once you read enough of them, you almost feel like this is information that you've known before. And in fact, a lot of near-death experiencers, during their experience, they'll receive knowledge like that forgotten knowledge. And the more I read about it, the more I realized that this was true for me and that everybody has actually experienced death many times through reincarnation. And so that was part of it right there. And,
so you're open to the idea that there might be a form of knowledge that is hidden consciously but still spurred your interest, which is fantastic. I'm open to that as well. But I do think it's interesting, and that's been my approach on the Skeptico show, is that, you know, you can really approach this topic from a purely intellectual, scientific standpoint and kind of get to the same place, you know? And to me, it's always baffling that more people don't question either on one side or the other this information. So as you point out, you know, you read Raymond Moody's book, it would seem that those kind of earth-shattering claims would force more people to say, hey, I have to decide one way or another. I have to either investigate this and prove to myself that it's totally a bunch of bunk, or I have to roll up my sleeves and really dig in there and say, wow, there is something more. Does that ever cross your mind? Are you surprised that more people aren't engaged in really finding out the truth and are willing to just kind of take such high-level answers of it? It must all be fake, or it must all be true?
You know, I haven't really thought that much about that on that perception, but I do agree that people who aren't predisposed to that kind of information, like, for example, I became a born-again Christian in the late 70s, around the time before I read Raymond Moody's book. So I was eager to learn about spirituality at the time I read Moody, and I was especially interested in Bible prophecy. As I read more and more about near-death experiences, I discovered that it doesn't jive with a lot of the stuff that I learned as a fundamentalist. Disparity grew over the years, as you might say, and it actually became part of this crisis that I had in 89 when I was diagnosed bipolar. It wasn't like a leap of faith, but I needed something to translate my fundamentalism to a more universal position, which is in the near-death phenomenon. And so one thing that did help me a lot was I started reading Edgar Cayce. And he, of course, was the perfect bridge for me to understand how Christianity in its mystical form is equal and practically identical to what the near-death experiences say.
Let's talk about that for a minute. First, I think it's very brave of you to disclose that. And anyone who goes to neardeath.com will find, first of all, a very logical, thoughtful, rational explanation of near-death experience, linked to many, many of the major figures, research, all laid out in a very logical format, pointing to a lot of research. Not a lot of the stuff that you're talking about that a lot of people will find very controversial. So I just want folks to know that. But then I want to switch into this other topic that you're talking about, because I think it's fascinating. I think it's very brave of you to talk about it. And I think, you know, there's such an oppressive push for normalcy in so many of these discussions.
I don't consider my bipolar disorder a negative thing anymore because, for one thing, a psychiatrist told me that the only difference between someone who is psychic and one who is psychotic is that the psychic can deal with the voices and the faces and hallucinations, but the psychotic can't. Partly because of a lot of the experiences I had, and I still do as a bipolar disorder, that I'm able to have a lot of synchronicity in my life, a lot of after-death communications happened to me, especially when my mother died in 2001. She died in a car accident, and what happened was, after she passed away, almost immediately, we started receiving, my whole family started receiving these synchronicities, almost about like signs from heaven that she was trying to communicate with us. 2 days after my mom died, I had a dream that became lucid, and all of a sudden I saw her there and sitting in a couch, like in a waiting room, like a lot of people see in near-death experiences. It was immediately lucid. I told her that I was how surprised I was that she was not dead. And she mentioned that she hadn't contacted my brother yet. And so the next day, I called my sister up, and she had virtually the same dream as I had, lucid and everything. And ever since that time, especially around the time we had a memorial of her and her funeral and her death anniversary, we would receive these synchronicities all the time. And it was especially important to me because I knew what was going on. And it's such a subtle experience that if you're not aware of what it is, you might easily dismiss it as just nothing.
I just had an interview not too long ago with a guy named Steve Miller. He's written a really nice introductory book to near-death experience. And his point, I was kind of pushing him on the Christian angle, and doesn't near-death experience, science, and the experience itself, doesn't it contradict Christian doctrine in some ways? And we got talking about that, and he really pushed back and he goes, "Hey, Alex, what you don't understand is that most people out there who hear about near-death experience don't understand even that there's science behind it. They think it's all anecdotal." And I had to take a step back because I think I've so immersed in the scientific aspect of that to realize that he's right. And I think that's what your website really addresses, doesn't it, is that there is science behind this. There are real researchers who don't have an axe to grind, who are just out there, have run across this amazing phenomenon and say, "I want to get to the bottom of it." And that's what I think you really try and bring to the forefront with NearDeath.com, isn't it, is just that there's a lot of science behind this phenomenon.
Originally, my focus was to help fundamentalist Christians ease over into the transition of the universalism that the near-death experience has. My transition was somewhat difficult, like I said, because of the bipolar disorder.
I've run across this with a number of people who've been on this show who don't have bipolar disorder or don't have it in their family, but still go through a major upset. I like on your website how you reference PMH Atwater, who's probably one of the more open researchers in terms of dealing with this, and saying, "Hey, a lot of these people go through this near-death experience or spiritually transformative experience, and it opens them up in a way that is extremely unsettling for their mental health." And I think we can't sweep that under the rug and say, "Oh, you know, this is only for people with this certain biological predisposition that this is going to upset their life." It should. Upsetting your worldview and shattering it is going to can be very dramatic. And furthermore, I think we have to contrast that with the way that a lot of atheist and skeptical people in our lives that we all know about handle it. Because when we've run into that, we see the opposite of that. I have several friends who are just incredibly resistant to this information because they feel like, I get the sense is that they feel like they can't deal with it on that level. They really don't want to deal with that kind of upset in their worldview. And I think there's a lot of Christians that are coming at it from the exact same way. It's like, don't you dare threaten me. I got everything working in a way that I can at least manage it. Don't you dare tell me this stuff isn't true.
Yeah. And again, it is, I think, having a, when you first encounter near-death, the near-death phenomena, you start reading, I think it is important that you have some form of, on the one hand, on the right hand, I guess you might say, have some form of religious background or open to the idea of, you know, an afterlife and deal with that. But then on the other hand, you have science, which is, I mean, some scientists are just as dogmatic as, you know, fundamentalist Christians. And in that sense, I've also tried to, the scientist in me, tried to appeal to them as well. And I do agree that people want to hold on to their belief, especially when it comes to death. And, you know, and as you know, in today's society, you know, death is always the enemy. You got to push it away. And, you know, like in the olden days, everybody, you know, knew what it was about. People died at home all the time.
Right.
And, but it's an earth shattering view. And, that's why I always believe that, you know, you don't have to have a near death experience, to feel the benefits. And Ken Ring, writes extensively about this, that how people are transformed from this. But you do have to approach it with an open mind. And too many people on the far right fundamentalists and on the far right scientists are not open-minded. Some are not open-minded, but you have to approach it with an open mind. Otherwise, people just turn off right away. And my goal in essence is to try to help people in that transition.
I want to transition back, and I want to talk about your transition from being a fundamentalist Christian to being this universal love kind of guy. I know that sounds very New Agey, but I think it's another important point that I want to talk about here, because it's something that, again, in this effort to legitimize, whatever that means, near-death experience science, it's so often glossed over. And that is that the overwhelming evidence of the overwhelming aspect of the phenomena that comes through once you accept that there is some reality to this near-death experience, the number one aspect of the phenomenon for people is love, and this unbelievable, all-encompassing love. And so tell us about the transition that you go through, and you do it in a very logical fashion. And again, folks, this is not the main focus of the neardeath.com website or of Kevin's book that we're going to talk about for a minute, but it's one thing that I found very interesting, and that's your deconstruction of Christianity as it's commonly understood and practiced, and how you resolve that with what we're understanding from the near-death experience phenomena.
Well, I have a real compassion for fundamentalists. Like I said, I was one once. I know them.
What is the problem, if you will, with near-death experience for the fundamentalist Christian? Where's the rub in that?
The rub is mainly is them having a strong belief in the devil. A lot of Christians are reluctant to embrace any kind of spirituality, you know, having to do with spirits and stuff. Even though the Bible is filled with, you know, dream phenomenon and spirits and prophecy.
You do, on your website, go through this deconstruction of Christianity in great detail. You pull in a lot of good information that people will find very compelling and a reason to follow up on. But you come to the conclusion from your website, Christianity as taught by Jesus resembles Tibetan Buddhism more than it does fundamentalist Christians. Kevin, I gotta wonder, doesn't this, I know you're trying, you say you feel a compassion and a great heart for fundamentalist Christians. I can't imagine a lot of fundamentalist Christians receiving that very well.
Yeah, I agree with that. The main point is that I like to have Christians understand is that if they do a look into the early history of Christianity and especially the recent relatively recent discoveries of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels found discovered in Egypt not long after that, that there was a lot of things that are cut out of the Bible, and for different reasons, for they didn't like pre-existence or reincarnation and that stuff. But I try to appeal a little bit to the history aspect of Christianity, and that modern Christianity is certainly not what it started out to be.
Yeah, but the problem gets even worse than that for early Christianity, because as you mentioned on your website, and we won't get into that whole Paul versus James, Jesus' brother, but anyone who's serious about this needs to go there and analyze that. But I think the big takeaway for me, and I appreciate that you're trying to kind of spoon feed this into a Christian sensibility, but it really throws open the whole idea of Scripture, the whole idea of the historical or the historical accuracy of Christianity, and where I think it leaves us grasping for creating our own truth, our own wisdom. And in that sense, I think it brings us back to, okay, what can I understand about what is happening to people right now in these near-death experiences or in these other spiritually transformative experiences? Isn't there a problem in trying to completely reconcile this stuff? Because I don't think once we deconstruct it, we can really put it back in a way that makes sense and say, oh, gee, if we just go back to the original Scripture, then everything's okay. Well, no, everything isn't okay. There's still a lot of myth-making going on there. There's still a lot of strange connections to Buddhism, to ancient Egyptian traditions, other Cretan traditions. I mean, it's not a clean cut to try and say, oh, if we just go back to the Gnostics, then everything's okay.
Yeah, the best way I try to handle this for the Christian is to help them understand that there's so, well, it's obvious there's so many different brands of Christianity, just like it was in Jesus' day or after him.
And some of those sects we can't really even call Christians. They were people with various kind of belief systems. And I think, I agree, that's the starting point for anyone who's a Christian, is to go back and look and understand that, you know, there were a lot of different teachings going on. And even when you take Paul and he's going and writing these letters, these aren't Christian groups he's writing letters from or enclaves. They're groups that had already formed around some other beliefs and were just trying to incorporate in this latest round of teaching. So, I mean, the whole thing gets really messy.
The problem for the hardened fundamentalist is believing anything is true outside of the Bible. And what I hope to say is that, you know, there's a grain of truth in all religions, and it's that grain of truth is about love. Well, it's universal. It was really what Jesus taught was love. He was constantly in conflict with the religious people there. And I try to let Christians know that there's how wrong it is to be, have such fixed beliefs, even fixed beliefs in near-death experiences. It would be easy to have a fixed belief to say, well, the near-death experiences show that reincarnation is true. Well, you know, even though that's my belief, you can't really say that. It would be a religion if I said that. Although the evidence points that way, I think it's important to keep an open mind to everything. You know, the possibility that, you know, what you have may be true, but it may only be partially true. That there's a bigger picture involved, and I suspect that's the case with near-death phenomena, that there is a bigger picture, that near-death experiences have very difficult time quantifying themselves. You know, how do you put into words this ineffable experience?
Let's talk about your book, Nothing Better Than Death, Insights from 62 Profound Near-Death Experiences. I found the book very interesting. There's some great near-death experience cases that I think will suck anyone into this topic because they're just profound. And like so many of these stories, they just have this human aspect to them that you can't escape from without being deeply moved by. But your book also has, I think, a great section on questions and answers where you take your experience in running this website, neardeath.com, and kind of pull out some of the most frequent questions that people ask, and then you go ahead and try and answer those. Tell us a little bit about this book and what you sought to do with it.
Well, the first half was mostly presenting the near-death experience, and I do have a large section at the end about reconciling the near-death experience with Christianity and vice versa. And I do try to present the information that, you know, you can't limit God to a book or to an experience like the near-death experience. While I was in the middle of writing that book, my mom died. And it was kind of ironic because the title of my book, of course, was, you know, Nothing Better Than Death. But it threw me off a little bit that, yeah, I know there's nothing better than death, but not for the people who are, right, you know, have to stay, hang around and you deal with it. And so that was another experience for me. And in fact, I'm in the middle of writing my next book, which should have been, the first title should have been, There's Nothing Better Than Love.
I think we all have to come at it the way that we come at it. And I don't know why, you know, you had these experiences or why you were thrown another curve, you know, just as you're writing this book. But hey, that's your story. What I want to do is appeal to folks who want to get to the bottom of things in a logical, systematic fashion. You do have to reject some things in order to let some other things in. So sometimes it's an uncomfortable process. So let's be okay with the uncomfortableness of challenging those beliefs, whether they be on the side of religious people or atheists and scientific-minded people. Don't we have to kind of crack some eggs to make the omelet?
Yeah, and my message to atheists is that, you know, it doesn't matter what you believe. Religion and stuff doesn't matter on the other side. It's deeds, not creeds, is what I hear a lot. Our life here is important. You know, we're here to do a job. We're all on a mission from God, as the Blues Brothers would say. And it doesn't matter whether you're an atheist or a religious person. You're accepted on the other side, whoever you are.
I'm with you for the most part in the overall message. Who can argue with that? But the deeds versus creeds thing, sometimes I think we want to downplay the relationship between the two. And especially, I tell you, for me personally, I just have always approached things from kind of a big picture standpoint. I need to understand the creeds before I can really embrace the deeds, if you will.
Yeah.
So becoming more accepting of the hard evidence that I am not a biological robot, that there is a reality to the spirituality that I sometimes get little glimpses of and that I see in other people, helps me get to the deeds part. Because otherwise, I can look at it very rationally and say, hey, I don't need that deed, or I'm liking the stuff that I'm getting. It's okay for me to have more stuff, and I can even draw lines and say, hey, as long as I'm not too bad, then it's okay, isn't it? There's a lot of people like me who approach it from, you know what? I want to know the creed. I want to know the truth, the scientific truth, as close as I can get to it. And then that, in turn, informs my deeds.
Yeah, and that's why, like, I view my uncle, who is the atheist, worshiping God, you might say in quotes, in a manner, in his own way, through his love of science and his love of physics and radiology. He's a radiologist. And in evolution, his passion is for nature and science and physics. And I think that approach is very spiritual.
Again, I can't quite agree, because I've seen this so often with these scientists. I mean, if they have a fundamentally flawed aspect to their theory, like consciousness, which is always the one that we bump into, then I'm not all that interested in what else they have to say. Even if they've discovered some truth about some particle or about some subatomic reaction or something like that, I think it's very possible that people can be incredibly well-educated on a narrow subject and really be rather oblivious to these larger truths and realities that they don't even explore. And as far as science being a high priest in what religion, it's not a religion that I want to be a part of.
I kind of believe what Edgar Cayce once theorized, that, and that is that religion and science, metaphysics, or philosophy are approaching a point of merger, and we're getting closer and closer to that point of merger where science does become kind of a mystical. And I see that in quantum physics.
I understand where you're coming from on that. I just think there also has to be a little bit of skepticism associated with that. Whenever I hear about this paradigm change, I always go back and have had some guests who talk about the great spiritualist movement in the early 1900s. Hey, everything was poised and ready for a paradigm shift. That paradigm shift didn't happen. And as a matter of fact, it reversed, and it went back in reverse and has been for the last 100 years. I think it's a real mistake to underestimate the appeal of the materialist, reductionist philosophy, and to kind of underestimate how much it permeates our culture, our lives in every way. So just because a few people have written best-selling books and made it onto the Oprah circuit, if you will, that doesn't mean that there's going to be an end to the war machine or the depleted uranium that we're going to shoot over in Syria or any of the rest of this stuff. I mean, the only thing I can conclude is that it's about personal transformation. And it's about embracing that. And in the process of embracing that, then I think trying to come in contact with other people and create that community. But beyond that, I'm very leery of drawing any conclusions about our current situation and how that might look in some larger time scale of history, because history hasn't been very kind to this kind of a paradigm shift, at least the history that we know of.
Yeah, I have to hand it to you that you deal with a lot of skeptics who are materialists, and you fully understand them far more than I do. And I do know that they're very reluctant to hear anything that has smacks of religion. Well, right now we see both sides, religions and the hardcore scientists, materialists, are kicking and screaming, but this point of merger is happening right now, especially in quantum physics, when there's a mystical aspect to it that can't really be denied, but the materialists and right now and the religionists are kicking and screaming. But I see a day where there'll be no more faith involved, because the new knowledge will come in that is inescapable. I mean, it'll be the religious person will have to abandon whatever erroneous faith they have or dogma, And the same with the scientists.
You could be right. I always think of Dean Radin, who I interviewed a long time ago on this show, and he said something that is very prophetic, and I know is going to be true. He said, you know, all these people talk about paradigm shift, and I'm paraphrasing here, obviously. He said, what happens is there's the shift, and then everyone goes, oh, yeah, that's what I've been talking about all along. You know, so there isn't this big dramatic thing. It's that scientists will find cover in saying a bunch of different things and go, oh, yeah, well, we knew that. We accepted that.
And you might even go further and say, well, with this new paradigm shift, everybody will be right. The scientists, right. The materialists will say, well, yeah, the near-death experience, there's nothing paranormal about it because we know now that consciousness survives death.
Right, right. We redefine consciousness in some way.
Yeah, and that's the key, really, when it comes down to it, quantifying what consciousness is. But I think if we can establish that consciousness does survive bodily death, and we're getting close to that, I think.
I agree.
On both sides, whoever has any dogma.
In that regard, I agree with you. And I've always been very negative about the paradigm shift thing for all the reasons that I just said. But I think you're right. I get the sense that the mounting data from near-death experience science and the way that that data syncs with findings in other areas is going to make it harder and harder for the consciousness folks to find cover in the reductionist biological robot meme. And I see that already in my conversations with some of the leading consciousness researchers. They know the old thing doesn't fit. They don't know what the new ground is. They're trying to find this emergent property of consciousness thing, which is really just a stepping stone that fails miserably if you really think it through. And I think they're going to have to find a new ground. And the only ground to be is this idea that consciousness in some way we don't completely understand does survive bodily death. And I agree with you, that's a whole new ball game.
That's going to be a big step. And I hope it would happen soon. I hope the results from the AWARE study and the Immortality Project. Then again, now we have this new study about rats having this explosion of energy in their brain. And, you know, to the materialists, they say, ha, that's it. Near-death experiences are just a brain thing.
We covered that a little bit on this show. And when that broke, that latest quote-unquote science news story, to me, it's just a repeated pattern of some little insignificant news being just splattered all over the science media as some attempt to kind of counterbalance the trend towards near-death experience science. But what I wrote and shared with people was the interview that I did a while back with Dr. Lakma Chawla from George Washington University, who found and proposed the same thing, that there's this burst of electrical activity in the brain just before it completely shuts down.
Yeah.
And what I found, and I repeated the quote, is I went to one of the near-death experience researchers, one of the leading folks, and I won't mention the name, but he said, that's perhaps the dumbest explanation for near-death experience yet. And I'd say the same holds true for this rat study, because obviously what it completely misses the boat on is two things. One is that we already know that these near-death experiences happen at times other than this peak period that they've studied in the rats. But more importantly, that we also know that these near-death experiences happen in brains that are not at all under trauma or stress.
Exactly.
It can happen to people when they're landing a plane and they think the plane might die and they can have it. So it really doesn't correlate very well with the experience. And to me, the real story is, how can we yet again take a non-story, take science that doesn't really fit, and how can we crank it out and prop it up to look like it really provides some kind of legitimacy to this counterbalancing mountain of evidence for near-death experience science.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's a matter of perspective, too. I think, you know, the materialists see the rat study and they say, ha.
They say reason for hope. They say the same thing that the Christians do when a Christian near-death experience apologist comes along and says, wait a minute, this near-death experience stuff, it doesn't mean that we have to abandon Christianity. And to a certain extent, I kind of take issue with holding folks by the hand there, but it just doesn't seem sincere. And in the same way, I don't think the Christian apologists are being sincere when they look at near-death experience science and they don't own up and say, wait a minute, this directly contradicts in some fundamental ways Christian doctrine, and in the same way, I don't think it's legitimate for the atheists and scientists to do the same thing with these.
They're not looking through Galileo's telescope yet.
Exactly.
They refuse to.
Exactly.
And it really is on both sides. It's a matter of ignorance.
So, Kevin, it's amazing work that you've done. Can you tell us what might be coming up for folks at neardeath.com? I know you work on the website a lot and are always updating it with new information. And you also mentioned this new book that you have coming out. When might we see that?
Well, it's going to be slow in coming because I'm actually involved in a lot more webmaster stuff than I am writing new articles, but as I am updating my website, I'm updating a lot of my my main articles that are more popular, I guess you might say. And of course, right now the deal is doctors who have NDEs, like Dr. Eben Alexander, you know. And I think they're the testimony of neuroscientists, and there are a number of them that I want to present. But when we get a number of neuroscientists having these experiences and acknowledging them, then, you know, that's what I'm interested in. And also the near-death experiences of presidents, like Ronald Reagan had a near-death experience, and Lincoln supposedly had one, how it changed his life. But these special categories of people having near-death experiences fascinate me a lot.
Well, Kevin, your website is really extremely important to this field. I hope that people who haven't been there for a while will revisit neardeath.com and reacquaint themselves with the information. I'm glad to hear that you're constantly updating it. I think that's vital. It's been great having you on. Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, it's my pleasure, Alex. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Kevin for joining me today on Skeptico. So I have one question to tee up from this interview, and it's a little bit different from the kind of questions I've asked in the past, because I want you to share with me on the forum or in the comment section of the website your personal journey through the near-death experience data. So what's some of the first information you came across? What did you do when you read about someone's story or you read about a researcher who'd published some research? Where did that take you? Where did that lead you? And then maybe where are you now in terms of your conclusions about near-death experience science? So if you feel up to it, let's take this discussion in a little personal direction this time around and see where that leads us. Of course, the place to answer that question and share your journey with us is either on the Skeptico website, right there in the comments section, or by clicking on over to the forum and joining the discussion over there. The Skeptico website is at skeptiko.com. There you'll also find, of course, over 200 previous episodes of Skeptico, a link where you can subscribe on iTunes, also an email and a Facebook link to me. Well, that's going to do it for right now. I have several interesting shows coming up, variety of topics. I hope you'll stay with me for all of that. But until next time, take care and bye for now.